America's ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Golic. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Golic. That's netsuite.com/Golic.
This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Yet none of that's getting done. Happy Tuesday, everybody.
Is it really?
Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests today, and there are many, will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. What if I told you, fellas, that we would walk in today and Cowboy star Ezekiel Elliott was one of many Dallas Cowboys and Houston Texans that have corona, tested positive for COVID-19, and that would be story 7,432.
Yeah, I think it would for a couple of reasons. One, all the other stories going on. And two, I think it was expected you were going to have some players test positive. Just like in college, when they came back, the expectation you were going to have players test positive. And I don't think that's would be untrue for any sport that's coming back. We had it the first time the UFC came back, one of the fighters did. So to me, a player testing positive in the NFL is not that shocking of news.
Nope. It's going to be interesting. Obviously, I think it being around the Cowboys is always going to make news. I think the state of Texas in general and how quickly it's been to reopen and how we connect this to areas that are experiencing sort of a resurgence and an uptick in positive tests again all get lumped into it. But you're right. It's going to happen, and it's going to now be, all right, how do teams, players, and everybody else weather the storm as this goes forward? And we go through this initial wave like we did when we got the news that Alabama players were coming back with positive tests. And certainly what we saw, we heard from Oklahoma State and other places about the positive tests.
Oh, we're going to hear from Oklahoma State this morning.
Yes,
there's no question about that.
I was going to say, it's a happy Tuesday for all of us because we don't work for Major League Baseball or for Oklahoma State's football program.
So we've got to swim in some stuff today, and let's start with the harsh reality that there is nothing less 100% than someone saying 100% we're going to play. This was just a week ago, last Wednesday. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred with Carl Ravitch on SportsCenter saying, oh yeah, we're playing baseball.
I'll be disappointed that we're unable to reach an agreement that allows us to play more games. But you know what? I think at the end of the day, the most important thing, and I'm not buying into your number of 48, the most important thing is that we play Major League Baseball in 2020, and I can tell you unequivocally we are going to play Major League Baseball this year.
So I don't think Rob Manfred understands the word unequivocally. Right?
Or
100%. Yeah. Those seem to be foreign concepts to the commissioner of Major League Baseball because that was Wednesday. This was last night on the SportsCenter special, Return to Sports. Rob Manfred, clearly not understanding the concept of 100%.
Well, I know the owners are 100% committed to getting baseball back on the field. Unfortunately, I can't tell you that I'm 100% certain that's going to happen. I had been hopeful that once we got to common ground on the idea that we were going to pay the players full prorated salary, that we would get some cooperation in terms of proceeding under the agreement that we negotiated with the MLBPA on March 26th. Unfortunately, over the weekend, while Tony Clark was declaring his desire to get back to work, the union's top lawyer was out telling reporters, players, and eventually getting back to owners that as soon as we issued a schedule, as they requested, they intended to file a grievance claiming they were entitled to an additional $1 billion. Obviously, that sort of bad faith tactic makes it extremely difficult to move forward in these circumstances.
All right, let's just hold on for 1 second, okay? I get it. The Major League Baseball owners and the commissioner are ticked off, and they're sort of trying to spin it. But for him to say, because the worst thing you can say about anybody is they're negotiating in bad faith when you're trying to negotiate. So to me, it doesn't seem like they're really trying to negotiate, because wasn't it just a week ago where Ken Kendricks, the general manager of the Diamondbacks, when they were this close, remember, we were in the deal zone, according to our Jeff Passan. We were in the deal zone to get a deal done when he went on an Arizona radio station, then said, and then, you know, I gotta say, everyone else has a revenue split. Why don't we have one? That couldn't be more the definition of negotiating in bad faith when you're throwing gas on that fire when you're that close to putting it out. So I don't want to hear it from Rob Manfred talking about the bad faith negotiating by the players when they're doing the exact same thing.
This is what happens. I mean, why are we shocked? I mean, I'm not shocked. I mean, this is what happens. You don't come to an agreement. You blame the other side. I mean, that's nothing about this has shocked me one bit. Once they haven't come to any kind of deal at all. Doesn't shock me what Manfred said. It doesn't shock me. And we'll read the statement from Tony Clark in disgust from Manfred's statement. You have that?
I do.
Go ahead. Read that. Well, obviously, you heard Manfred saying, well, they're not negotiating good faith, so they're throwing it at the union, and here's the union's response.
Yeah, here was Tony Clark. Players are disgusted that after Rob Manfred unequivocally told players and fans there would be 100% a 2020 season, he has decided to go back on his word and is now threatening to cancel the entire season. Any implication that the Players Association has somehow delayed progress on health and safety protocols is completely false. As Rob has recently acknowledged, the parties are very, very close. The latest threat is just one more indication that Major League Baseball has been negotiating in bad faith since the beginning. So there you go.
Maybe it's wrong, but I guess I kind of assumed that the commissioner of a league would be the one sort of responsible for trying to keep a tenuous situation together a little better than going out and clearly just carrying ownership's water in the way that he did on that one. I understand he works for the owners.
He does work for the owners, yeah.
I understand he works for the owners in these situations, but I hardly can recall an instance, and maybe this is me either just not remembering or being short-sighted, whatever it is, of a commissioner like Adam Silver or even Roger Goodell, who has a far less solid relationship with his players, coming out and openly inciting rage like this by pointing at that group and saying, we don't believe you're operating in this way. And to go with the farce that 100% of owners are committed to playing baseball, when we have heard all along the way, like even if I, you know, you hadn't heard whispers of other things along the way, based on what we've been told publicly about the number of owners saying, well, baseball's not that profitable, and the number of owners saying that we're going to lose money along the way if we play games in empty stadiums. And you think based on just those tremors that have made their way to the surface with us, that you've got a group of hyper-rich, hyper-competitive billionaires who make the most of their money outside of baseball, that they're 100% committed. That's the most laughable thing I heard in that entire statement was, we have a group of owners 100% committed to playing baseball, because I think that's an out-and-out lie.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think there's some owners that would love to just cash it in for the year and be done. The one thing I will say about the commissioner acting the way he does or what he should be, I'll just say this, and all I can do is go from personal experience. There's never been an issue, and I went through a strike in 87, where we ever felt like the commissioner was the in-between guy.
No.
The commissioner was work for the owners. That's it. So we never trusted the commissioner.
I get it, but like publicly saying like this is like, I don't remember an instance of Roger Goodell publicly because this seems like instigation.
Yeah. So I guess I'm carrying too far. My thought always was owner or commissioner owner. So
yes.
He's just a mouthpiece to the owners. And that's what it's going to be. And if he incites because he's with the owners.
Oh, I mean, I figure most leagues outside of the NBA look at their commissioner as the enemy. I don't disagree with that in one bit. It just seems jarring to see an owner or a commissioner come out here and so blatantly point the finger at the players on something labor-related like this. And maybe this isn't me remembering enough of what happened in 2011 or anything that's gone on recently, so I'm more than willing to accept that I might be wrong on this. It just seems sort of jarring to hear it so blatant and so out in the open.
So let's keep score here for a second, okay? Just to understand where we are. And these were the offers to each other. Again, it never says counter offer. It's just offer because nobody cared about the first offer.
Yeah, exactly.
Baseball, 82 games, $1.23 billion guaranteed with playoffs. Union offer 114 games, $2.86 billion guaranteed to us. Baseball's offer 76 games, $1.432 billion guaranteed with playoffs. Union, 89 games, $2.2 billion guaranteed. Almost $1 billion apart there. Baseball, 72 games, $1.5 billion max. Union's offer, we're getting nowhere, set the schedule.
Yeah.
That's where we are, and the reason why baseball is weary on setting the schedule is just what you heard Manfred say, is the union then will file a grievance saying, you didn't follow the March agreement, you didn't do your best efforts to get a season going with the most games possible, so we are filing a grievance that could amount to whatever money, and baseball wants no part of that.
Which is funny, because we were told at the very beginning that if this is what happened, that would be the direct result. Yeah. Everybody knew it. Everybody knew that was the eventuality, and now Rob Manfred and company are acting surprised and disgusted by the way the events have turned out.
Clearly, that March 26th email agreement has so much ambiguity, nobody
so
can
much.
Figure
and causing
what
a lot
the
of
hell
issues,
it meant.
Man.
And by the way, when we hear these people say baseball's not profitable, now would be a good time. That was reported last week that Turner Broadcasting has agreed a new postseason deal for baseball for over $1 billion.
Yeah, there's still a lot to get into.
Somehow, yeah. I think they'll be fine. The real question is, does anyone even freaking care anymore? And we'll get to that after this.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr. All right, Golic and Wingo here with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So it's time for some Straight Talk now, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And you heard there snippets of Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, on the SportsCenter special last night, basically saying he would welcome a team signing Colin Kaepernick in the wake of suddenly everybody in the NFL realizing, hey, maybe what he did in 2016 wasn't so bad after all, as we have this actualization. That's a lot of us were trying to put out there back at the time, what he was doing and what he wasn't doing specifically, but some people seem to be getting it a little bit more. The interesting thing here is it's obviously nothing new that it's up to a team
right.
to sign him. I mean, the NFL can't impose thou shalt sign said
well,
player.
I heard one actor player saying assign him to a team. That doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
You don't assign him to a team. That's not how this goes. A team is going to have to step up.
Right.
And we should point out that this is not the first time that Roger Goodell and the NFL have tried to get Colin Kaepernick back into the system some way, some shape or form. There was that workout that was scheduled. And look, it all fell apart because much of the same way Major League Baseball is falling apart right now, because a lot of distrust on both sides from Colin's camp and the NFL on what should and shouldn't be and waivers and who should be there and who should not be there, should it be live. All that kind of stuff fell apart. Remember, he was going to be somewhere, and then at the last second they moved to a different place and Colin did a workout with some people, and it became a bleep show, for lack of a better term. But this is not the first time that the NFL has said, okay, let's try and get you back in the
league. You say that. There's a lot of people on the other side that said that was just a BS attempt by the NFL. They don't agree that anything, that was just a publicity stunt and nobody was going to sign him. So while I get what you're saying, there are those on the other side of this that said, you can say all you want that was a realistic look could we get on a team, and they don't buy it one bit. That being said, it is all about the fact that they don't trust one another.
There's just no trust.
So the part of Roger, and Roger is right, it is a team signing. Remember, Roger Goodell is his spokesperson for the owners. The owner has to decide they want to sign Colin Kaepernick. And the other part of that where he said, and hey, if he doesn't play, we would invite him to sit at the table. And, you know, that's however you want to look at it as extending. That's never going to happen. I don't believe there is any trust between Colin Kaepernick and the NFL. Hell, they went through a lawsuit of blackball and collusion. I don't think that would ever happen either. And personally, Mike, I don't think a team is going to sign him. Not so much for the fact that he couldn't play in the league right now, but if you come to a situation where he's not what you think and you have to cut him, and of what that could just the what that may lead to in the thought process of you just sign him to say you signed him, and then you end up, and I have no idea how it would happen. If it would happen, maybe he would come in and he would be the backup and eventually start again. I have no idea. But I think there is a fear from a football side for an owner to say, let's bring in a guy, and then we have to cut him, and then what's the fallout from that?
Well, because he hasn't played since 2016.
4 years. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So here's Louis Riddick, our NFL front office insider, on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt on the idea that Cap will or could be signed.
I'm skeptical that it's going to actually happen, pure football perspective, because I think the supply of quarterbacks outweighing the demand, and I think we've seen that play itself out as far as how some of the quarterbacks that have signed accepted below market contracts. There's a guy out there right now like Cam Newton who still can't find a job despite the fact that he's a former league MVP. So I think it's going to be tough for a quarterback who hasn't played in four full seasons to really find work right now, you know, from a pure football perspective.
So that's the issue right now. Like, there's no doubt he should have been signed before now because he could play. Like Nathan Peterman, I feel like Nathan Peterman's an obvious target, but Mike Glennon was on a team. Colin Kaepernick has played much better than a lot of these quarterbacks. So it's never been about his ability. But at this point, is it about the layoff as much as it is anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty logical for anyone that's ever played football and sat out or missed a season or been a part of some time period away like that. It takes a lot to come back and get back up to speed, and that's at positions that are far less severe and impactful than the quarterback spot. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely a factor in all this that's going to make it difficult, in addition to the normal ones, because you guys are right. This boils down to a decision made by ownership in a lot of this, and so you would either be looking at the situation where you say, in addition to overcoming that either the hearts and minds of owners have changed so dramatically on this issue that one would be incentivized to hire them, or they have now been convinced that Colin Kaepernick would be a profitable portion of their team in all of this, which there has been an argument for that in a while, that there's a large section of your fan base in the NFL that supports what Colin did, and as a result of that, having him around would be something that is good for business, because we know that's how these guys tend to judge decisions that get made in all of this. And so I look at those two sources of, all right, would X team or X ownership group sign Colin Kaepernick? And I say, all right, those are overwhelmingly unlikely. Now, we're in a position where they're being forced to listen more than ever, but I don't think in the span of this couple of weeks and what's turning into about a month now has been enough to fundamentally change the hearts and minds of owners or convince them of something that they haven't believed is true for so long. The latter has a lot more chance of becoming true, of them looking at this situation and saying, huh, everybody's really on this right now. There seems to be a very rising tide of support for this issue and the things linked to Colin's protest, so he might be good for business for us, and it might be worth us taking a chance on a guy who hasn't played football in 4 years.
Well, one of the things I heard that I thought was very interesting from Lewis on the way in this morning was it was sort of a throwaway line he had in talking about whether or not Colin was going to be signed, and basically, I think it was Lewis, I don't want to put words in his mouth, I thought I heard it from Lewis, was basically, you know, the owners are going to do what's best for their bottom line. And then the next line was, unlike NASCAR, who clearly decided that when they were going to ban the stars and bars, the Confederate flag, that spoke to a large portion of their fan base and a large portion of people who actually pay money to go do that. And they decided to do something contrary to that because they thought it was the right thing to do. And yet here we are with Colin Kaepernick. People are still wondering if it's worth the risk in the NFL.
Let's remember, in NASCAR, though, it's different than the NFL. It's not like all the owners of the drivers have hired that president. That guy, the president there, made that decision, unless I'm getting that wrong.
And it was Louis Riddick, by the way, that did say
that. Okay, unless I'm getting that wrong about who ultimately makes the decision in NASCAR. In the NFL, it's ownership. It's not Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell can't sit up there and make law and say, this is now gone, this is now here. That has to go through ownership. So there is a difference. And to go more to your point, Mike, where are the owners in this? You know, where have they had their stance up? Because we sure as hell haven't heard from a lot of them. So we have no idea. And that's just the underlying non-football side of this. There really is the football side of this. He hasn't played in 4 years. There's no off-season program. He literally, the first time he would show up for a team would be in training camp and hasn't played in 4 years. That's a real concern, as you said, at any position, let alone the quarterback position. Now, does that mean he couldn't go in and learn it? No, absolutely not. But man, that is really putting someone behind the curve there.
And I guess that's the thing, is like discussing that almost feels like, it feels like we're wasting time, because that's so far clearly down on the list of reasons why Colin is not actually in a camp right now. Like, that is very far down on it. What Lewis brought up was as less to do with Colin's ability to get himself back into football mode and more, it's just been the time and inundation of other quarterbacks into the league. Yeah. You've got so many bodies right now that he mentioned. A guy in a former league MVP in Cam Newton is just sitting around sort of waiting like, what's up? We've got guys that have started tons of meaningful games that are all going to go into this fall holding clipboards right now. A wave of talented young quarterbacks is still in the mode of finding out if they can play or not in the league. And so all of this has led to kind of a glut of talent at the position, but that has very little to do with, well, yeah, it would take Colin time to work his way back into that. Like, we know the laundry list of reasons keeping him from being where he wants to be. That is very, very far down on the list.
And again, and from though it is part of it, Colin would have to understand what backups are getting now, what guys are being signed for now, and what he would sign for. And I don't know what his thoughts are about that either, right? We don't know.
But again, that's the fourth or fifth or sixth maybe thing on the list of.
Not if he says, I want to play quarterback. They say, okay, we'll sign you for $1 million as a backup. He said, no, I want 10 million.
But
I
guess that's the point.
But I guess that's
the point, is that's not the top issue, because we know what the issue is going to be if a team was looking to sign Colin, right?
Right, they would have to
the barrier to entry is his stance on everything and whether or not it vibes with what that owner thinks and what that owner believes their fans
to make
would
the initial call. Yes,
so
that is the top thing.
That's the barrier to entry to me, and that's why it's like, yes, all of these things are very real parts of the conversation, but they're third and fourth down the list in a way that we're never going to get to.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because I believe when the Ravens were thinking about bringing in Colin Kaepernick a few years ago, they said, listen, we listened to our fans, and they said blank. Well, now you had Ravens over at Stephen Bisciotti come out and say very pointedly, hey, we need to listen to these players,
right,
and we need to understand what they're going for. So that's one organization alone that seems to have completely flipped. But at the end of the day, I have questions about whether Rob Gronkowski is going to be Gronk coming back from a year off, let alone, as you said, a quarterback and everything that goes on there. There are so many layers to this. And we heard Pete Carroll say last week on Seahawks.com that one coach or one team did call him and inquire a little bit, but it's one thing to make a call and it's another thing to make the call.
That's the biggest hurdle, is making the call before we even get to, as Mike said, those other things that do seem ancillary. They'll become important after that call, but that's the first barrier you have to break through.
And all of this is Straight Talk by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So, what if I told you that now we have to deal with another thing in the NFL, and that is more COVID-19 tests. A small number of Dallas Cowboys players have tested positive for the coronavirus, and a source said the Houston Texans have also tested positive, a couple of them. And agent Rocky Arsenault told the NFL Network that one of those Cowboys that tested positive, or confirmed the report, rather, let's be clear, he wasn't the source for the story.
Yeah, but
everyone about that was that his agent, Rocky Arsenault, is the agent for Ezekiel Elliott. Zeke is one of those that tested positive for coronavirus, but is feeling good. Elliott later questioned on Twitter why his medical information was being made public by referring to the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act by just tweeting, HIPAA? ? And he's certainly not the first person to do this. Obviously, when Jason Pierre-Paul had fingers blown off his hand, that came out, and he was a little upset how that information was leaked. So, look, he's not the first, and more than likely won't be the last. But this brings into a bigger question. We're getting to the point. Again, we've said this all along. Football has the longest runway. Runway's getting shorter every day, because that training camp date is what, July 27th, I think
July
it
28th.
Is?
July 28th. All teams. July 25th.
Damn it. I was off by a day.
Two teams that play early.
So we're getting closer and closer to that, and we're still trying to figure out how we're going to social distance and play the game of football. And at the end of the day, you can't do both. So I think NFL players, owners, and coaches are going to have to be comfortable with the idea that this stuff is going to happen, and we're going to have to find a way to work around it, or we're not going to work around it.
Well, yeah, I guess maybe others are more shocked than I am.
No.
I mean, how did we not think some players were going to test positive? And again, I didn't see, was it symptomatic, asymptomatic? I do not know.
He had symptoms.
He had symptoms.
He said
but
feeling better.
Feeling better. So, I mean, to think this wasn't going to happen, I think, is fool's gold. So it's a matter of getting through of this and then seeing where we are afterward to still try and start everything on time. Because, again, and we all know this, you can do all the social practicing, social distancing things you want to leading up to the fact that you have to get on the field and you have to play. So, I mean, that's still, I don't think this has changed anything by having these positive tests and they don't have to even report for another month, to training camp, even actually over a month. So this to me is just, oh, it's a big name in the NFL. So, okay, while it's out there, but this shocks me in no way, shape or form.
Yeah. I don't know what the reaction has been. Like, I haven't talked to enough people to gauge the public reaction, but I think it's just, it's the news. It's all right. This is a real thing. It's like when we came back and we saw some of the college players test as they were coming back into their schools' respective campuses in all of this. And so now it's all right. This is real. They are names, you know, which might, you know, help make it real for a lot of people, because we know what it took at the beginning of all this for it to sort of crystallize in people's minds that this was something we are going to be dealing with. And so for it to be the Cowboys and for it to be Ezekiel Elliott as a name goes, all right, you're right. Maybe you don't sound the alarms, but this is a reminder. This is going to be, if you were forgetting because the rest of the country seems to be forgetting, this is going to be a factor in the way that we go about things from now on.
Yeah, listen, Richard Sherman had a conversation with Josina Anderson, and these are some of the things that Richard said to her. He said, in general, I think we just need to go out there as best we can and live life. I'm not sure that we can shield players from something that seems inevitable. Just think about how these protocols keep raising more questions. Are we testing the bus drivers and their families, the flight attendants, the pilots, the hotel staff, the stadium staff, the refs families, the people that hold yard markers 3 times a week? You see how deep this goes with contact tracing. Are you going to fly people in groups of 15 on the plane? Are the young guys not going to go out all year? I mean, this is crazy. There is no way to implement all these protocols 1,000% safely and make it completely foolproof. We just have to do the best we can, carefully and respectfully. That's basically him saying, it's going to happen. Yeah, we just have to find a way to deal with it.
He's 1,000% right. Follow the guidelines as best you can. But at some point, I mean, we all got to get on a plane together. We all got to hit each other on the field. So the best we can do, they're trying to do as a sport, I believe they said they're going to test every third day. That they're going to test everybody is to try, and then they'll be exposed to other people when they're on the road. We get that. And then they test every third day and they see where it goes. And if someone tests positive, they get quarantined. And boy, let me tell you, 2 weeks of quarantine during a football season, that's going to be a tough road from not only missing a player possibly in games, but what happens to your, you know, being in shape to not be able to do anything. But I agree with them 100%.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the NFL is going to have to address roster flexibility in a way they've never had to address it before, right? The NBA has sort of come up with that in, I don't know, the 7,000 pages that they set to be coming out this week on the protocol of the bubble system, but at the end of the day, for this to work, I think the NFL is going to have to open up its idea that we're going to need more roster flexibility than we've ever seen before.
If I am the NFL, I am maybe more so than anybody else, I am furious with Major League Baseball. Because you cost us such a valuable learning time period towards the end of this summer watching the way you work. Because baseball was going to be the only other sport that was outdoors doing this and that was traveling and not doing this in a bubble. And so you were going to be able to gather so much information from what Major League Baseball did and what their venture back into the world of sports looked like. And now you have lost out on that. And if I am Roger Goodell and company, I am furious with the way that this has gone down. I am right out there with the chorus of Major League Baseball fans all grabbing their oxygen, looking up at the commissioner and booing and hissing and throwing garbage.
Let me just say one word to you. Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Look at how the German soccer team has done it.
But you can look at that, yeah. But the country-to-country comparison is not there. League Baseball is close to a perfect comp as you're going to get because you're dealing with what's going on in this country, and that is always going to be a factor.
Correct.
We could talk about looking at the KBO, but we know the societal norms are different from country to country in a way that are going to affect. I mean, look around our country right now. That would be a far bigger concern for me than anything happening within the body of a league for someone like the NFL, for some group like college football, that's getting ready to try and play a season while you're seeing certain places start to have spikes in cases, all of this start to change again in a way that looks like it could be unwieldy. So those are all things that factor in there, why baseball would have been a very great sample for the NFL to have that they now lose out on it. So yeah, you got to look at Germany and all these other places that ain't us.
Well, it's interesting too, right? Because when the coronavirus first broke out, specifically in Boston, New York, and parts of the Northeast, a lot of the other countries were saying, hey man, that's their thing. We're not going through this. Well, as New York cases fall, and Connecticut, I think, is less than 200 people in the hospital right now because of coronavirus. Shockingly, those states that weren't as concerned in Florida and Arizona, their cases are going up, and those were the places where baseball was supposed to be played, to your point. So it's hard to make an apples-to-apples comparison from our country to other countries like Germany, Spain, or Italy, where their pro sports leagues are beginning to go because they're so much smaller. You know, it's like what happened here in March is finally getting to other places in the country right now.
It is, and so what the NFL lost out on, again, in Major League Baseball as a sport that was going to not operate in a bubble, was going to travel like the NFL is getting prepared to, that's going to play their games outside, albeit with much less contact than the NFL, but in a similar setting that they could get a handle on, now loses out on being able to look at them and say, all right, well, how did they travel when they went on the road? What did they do with the team charter and all this when they got to a road site and had to deal with the team hotel? How often did they find that testing worked to help them make sure that they could keep guys safe in all of this? All of those things, and I say it somewhat in jest that they're furious with Major League Baseball, but that was supposed to be one of the advantages of that long runway was you got to kind of look and see, all right, what is everybody else doing and how can I learn from it?
To your point, though, Trey, you know, expanding the rosters, you wonder, will that go? They already talked about expanding the practice squad.
Right.
Expand it because, remember, the practice squad had a couple places for veterans.
Yep.
Maybe expand that to some more veterans just so you have a bigger pool, even though you're adding jobs in a league that's going to lose a lot of money this year. So there is that line as well. But given the fact that we've seen in college where multiple players have tested positive and you'd lose them for a little bit, you very well may need some bodies to fill.
Yeah. At the end of the day, if they want to play, they're going to have to find a way to come to the rationale that we're going to need more people around to play in case we have, you know, those scenarios where a quarterback gets and you have to quarantine the entire quarterback room. There's no way around it. Coming up next, they say a picture is worth a thousand words, but don't take that phrase for it. Take Mike Gundy for it. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, no doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
So sometimes when you're dealing with a lot, you know what you need? You need that one voice, that calming voice, that influence on you, that will soothe things for you just in the way they deliver the words.
And we couldn't find one of those, so we got Marcus Spears.
That is somewhat of what I was going, but not really. So sometimes we just needed a little loving from the pastor. So ladies and gentlemen, we are delighted to be joined on Golic and Wingo this morning by Marcus Spears, our football analyst. Marcus, sometimes people just need a verbal hug with all the things that are going on. Can you give us a little bit of that today?
I absolutely can. First of all, man, it's good to be back with you guys. I've been super busy over the past couple of weeks and watching the show, watching you guys navigate, go through everything that's going on, man. Hell of a job as always.
Well, thanks, man.
Appreciate that.
And, you know, we want to get into some of the specifics of college, but I want to start at an overall thing for the three of us out of the four, sorry, Trey, that were recruited out of high school to play, you know, big-time college football.
I was recruited to – oh, football,
yeah,
sorry.
There you go.
I was
no. – I'm wondering, Marcus, you know, given what's going on at all the different colleges where players are starting to speak up, and we have the situation here at Oklahoma State, but others talking about buildings and statues, and we're hearing more talk from players. Going back to when the three of us were recruited, it was like, man, where do we want to go play football? You know, we love the school we want to go to, but man, let's just go play football. How different do you think it's going to be with the upcoming recruits in the next few years about what they're looking at in specifics at schools? Do you think it really changes?
Yeah, it'll be an effect. And I think a part of it is just the evolution of the athlete. I've been talking about that for a year, and we've had these certain incidents in college football where I think Northwestern was trying to unionize. You had players fighting for name, image, and likeness. The NCAA was on the end of that. And now with everything going on in our society, especially in sports as well, it was a movement already happening before we start dealing with COVID and obviously dealing with the social injustices that's happening around the country. But when you look at everything that's kind of rolled into the transformation of sports in general, especially when it comes to college football, these players are a lot smarter than we was, MG. they have an idea of what's going on beyond the playing field. And, we all can speak to that. And it's not like, we were dummies just roaming around like zombies, but we didn't pay attention to all of the things that were outside of the realm of football like these guys do now. But information for them is so readily available. Parents are making decisions based on how leadership in this particular time. I'm sure parents are having conversations with their sons that are being recruited about how these coaches are responding to racial issues in the country. Obviously, parents are looking at how universities and coaches are handling coming back from COVID-19 in this pandemic. So, yes. And then the name, image, and likeness part of it as well is going to create a shift as far as players possibly going to not so big colleges, because you can sell your name, image, and likeness as much as you possibly can. And we know that a select few players are going to be able to really capitalize off that in a real way. And I honestly believe that doesn't have necessarily a big influence on where you go if you're individually just a superstar. So it's a lot of things transpiring, but I go back to my original, players just are a lot smarter. They understand more of what they're signing on for, and now they're in a position with what's going on in our streets and in our country right now with how these coaches are responding and standing up for all of the players and majority of the players that don't look like them.
Talking to Marcus Spears with us here on Golic and Wingo. And so, Marcus, we've got that whole awakening going on for the guys as a part of the college game. And in the NFL, we feel like for a lot of people, that moment came 4 years ago with everything that Colin Kaepernick went through. And yet we're still listening to Commissioner Roger Goodell talk about Colin Kaepernick, talk about the prospect of a team signing him. Do you think that there is any possibility that still happens at this point? And if not, what is Cap's role in all of this going forward?
I think it's a shot in the dark, to be honest with you. And what Roger Goodell said, what Troy Vincent, the vice president, said, is irrelevant to me, because this is about one or a few of 32 owners deciding to sign Colin Kaepernick. He looked pretty good in his last workout we saw, as botched as that was. Of a deal when they decided to put it on. But when you think about being out of the league, just from a football standpoint, when you think about being out of the league this long, it's very difficult for guys to be out of the league 1 year and have an opportunity to come back. I would love to see Colin sign and be able to play and it not be a response to what's going on right now, right? It'll be hard to legitimize it unless he actually went and played in games and had success. That's the way you legitimize it. Or, they saving face. They finally, they say, let's give him a job to make it look good from optics and all of that. So it just depends on what the approach is, if it's a real opportunity or if it's an opportunity to kind of say, hey, look, we got Colin Kaepernick back in the league. I think it's important, man, for these 32 owners to own up and admit that Colin had it right at the point when he was doing it. And it was unpopular, and a lot of people, switched the narrative. But this is exactly what we're dealing with right now, and the awakening of this country is what he was talking about 4 years ago. So I think there's a lot of layers that involved Colin Kaepernick re-signing with a football team. I know for me personally, though, I would like to see it, but I would like to see it be legitimate and him obviously have an opportunity to not only sign with a team, but play if he's ready and if he shows you he's better than the guy that's on your roster or in a second, in a backup role and possibly have an opportunity to play in some games. And that's how I look at it, because now it's cool for everybody to be a part of the protest, and it's cool for everybody to speak out and raise their voice. There's almost a point of none. You don't have to be uncomfortable now to go with saying all of these things need to change and we need to address them. So you have to be really careful on what you're doing. From is it for the look? Is it to make everybody feel better, or is it a legitimate shot? And that's in a lot of arenas in what's going on in the country right now.
Listen, there is a lot going on, and that's why it's always good to have you come on the show with us and give us your perspective, and it's important for us to listen. Brother, we could have a conversation for an hour and a half, but unfortunately, that's not the way this works. We appreciate your time this morning, and hopefully we'll talk to you real, real soon, okay?
All right, my brothers. I'll talk to y'all later, man.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold.
Very interesting where that went.
So for more on the NBA side of things, let's delve into that now. We're delighted to be joined by our NBA reporter, Malika Andrews. Malika, thanks for being with us this morning. Hope you and yours are well and safe. But where are we in your mind right now with the idea of players like Dwight Howard and Kyrie Irving and Avery Bradley voicing their opinions that maybe resuming play in the NBA isn't the thing that players should be thinking about right now?
Man, gentlemen, it's only 8 a.m. on the East Coast, and there's already so much going on.
We're dealing with a lot, Malika.
I need another cup of coffee. But, I mean, in terms of Kyrie and Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard and other players who I'm told share their sentiments, some of their concerns surrounding return to play and having that potentially be, one, a distraction from some of the social justice momentum that's happening in our country right now, and two, looking at the cases in Florida of coronavirus that continue to go up, those are their two main pillars of concern, basically in that order. And yesterday, Adrian Wojnarowski and I reported that Kyrie Irving and Avery Bradley are a part of a players' coalition that is coming together to try to get some answers from the league that they feel just haven't been addressed surrounding those two things. So what I can tell you is these guys are absolutely unified in the fact that what they want is to make sure that there isn't a distraction going on from the momentum surrounding Black Lives Matter. Where there are questions now is there's just a divide in how that is best executed. Is it best executed by playing and using that platform the way Garrett Temple says that it is? Or is it best executed by not going to Orlando, not playing, and foregoing that time in order to continue to protest and raise awareness around this? And Kyrie seems to be taking that stance. Ultimately, it seems like whichever group has more people, the rest of the players will get behind that because they all have the same good intention. But there is just a slight divide over what's the best way to move forward there.
Well, let's spin that forward a little bit, because last we all checked, there has been an agreement between the union and the NBA to go to Orlando and to play these games. So what would be the result of them all of a sudden calling Adam Silver and said, hey, you know that thing we agreed upon a while ago? Maybe not so much. We're hesitant to go play. I mean, how do we think that's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, the thought that there will not be distractions if teams don't play probably isn't totally realistic just because of all the potential fallout that could happen there. You know, Bobby Marks reported that the league stands to lose upwards of $1.2 billion if the season were to continue. Obviously, there could be a lockout in the future. There could be other issues, including tearing up the CBA, which could be problematic. But at the end of the day, if you ask some of these players about those things, they will say in the face of 400, 500 years of systemic oppression, in the face of racism, that doesn't matter. And so those are the two kind of sides in which they are weighing and tipping the scales.
Talking to Malika Andrews, our ESPN NBA reporter with us here on Golic and Wingo. Malika, is there maybe a fear amongst anyone in this coalition that if LeBron James were to come out with, we know the might of his opinion in the league, and say that he is committed to playing basketball in 2020 in Orlando, that it would severely alter some of the things that they're trying to plan?
You know, I believe that there is also that group of players that believes that they can do both, that it's not mutually exclusive to raising awareness around social issues, around issues of race, around issues of police brutality, and also playing basketball. And it was seen that potentially LeBron is in that group because you're already seeing him doing some really big, important, impactful things surrounding voting that would help the Black community in terms of what they're attempting to do. Yeah, I mean, we know that this is a star-powered league, right? We know that if the biggest names in the game really want to return to play, there is some weight and some sway to that. But this is unprecedented territory, both from the coronavirus standpoint, from the protests that are going on. And so you can only lean on what has happened previously so much. But previously what has happened is when the league stars speak out, oftentimes it goes their way. Kyrie Irving is one of those league stars, but he isn't playing this year. So that's sort of all the different factors that are swirling around in this enormous cauldron.
An enormous cauldron is the best way to describe it, even though some have used a bubble or a campus or resort with the NBA as they get set to head down to Orlando. Yeah. As Malika Andrews is with us. Okay, so look, we all try not to delve in these waters, but we have to at some point in the prognostication camp. Do you see this thing going forward without being much of a hitch, or do you think as more and more time goes on and potentially more players speak up, things may be in doubt about this thing playing out the way we believed it all would?
Right now, I believe from what I've learned in my reporting that the NBA feels confident. We saw it with Adam Silver on Mike Greenberg's return to sports show last night. He feels confident, the league feels confident that both ways will they'll find the path forward. You know, unlike baseball, which you guys are giving me a headache talking about that at the beginning of this segment, they feel that they have a relationship with the MBPA that will allow them to find some common ground. Now, will it go forward without a hitch? It's very hard to see that happening just based on the coronavirus, not necessarily just based on some of the racial issues that are happening. You know, when we are talking about players getting tested every other day in the weeks leading up to the bubble, statistically speaking, it is more than likely that at least one player there will test positive. Now, the NBA has said, we are prepared for that. We have contingency plans in place, but without a hiccup, it's going to be relative. And so by standard definition, I'd say no. It's going to be a very low probability that this will go forward without a hitch.
Malika Andrews joining us here on Golic and Wingo. And how surprised are you guys as insiders and reporters and maybe players even at this point that we have not heard from LeBron James?
You know, I don't believe that there is a widespread thought of where is LeBron, just because he is, if you look at his social media, if you look at the group he put together, I mean, he's putting his stamp on this movement. He's saying one of the issues surrounding why it is so difficult to achieve racial equality is because Black and brown people have disproportionate access to voting, and Black and brown people often in the United States have lost the right to vote because at some point they were incarcerated and then that privilege was taken away from them. So he's worked in really tangible, active ways to try to combat that. And I believe that he thinks, look, this speaks for itself. My body of work in terms of my position speaks for itself. And LeBron has long been a proponent of both being a, you know, vehemently outspoken person on social rights issues, on race issues, and also still taking the court every day. So I think he feels that he's made his stance on this clear, even if he hasn't come out and put it in a statement.
Malika Andrews with us. Along those lines, the Minnesota Timberwolves and Lynx put out something very interesting today, or maybe it was yesterday, I'm not sure. It said, Election Day, November 3rd, is now an official company holiday at the Minnesota Timberwolves and Lynx. All employees will have the entire day off to be engaged citizens and ensure their voices will be heard. That from the CEO of the Timberwolves and the Lynx, and Jed York of the 49ers retweeted it saying, great message, the 49ers are definitely on board with this. What do you make of what the Minnesota Lynx and the Timberwolves and now the, apparently the 49ers are doing?
Yeah, so the Timberwolves have, they said that they are going to make this a paid holiday. And just for clarification's sake, because I clarified it, the team right now, that only includes the business operations side. That doesn't actually include the basketball side yet, because they're still trying to figure out the NBA schedule and how that would work moving forward. But yeah, this is something you're seeing gain momentum. I mean, my former college basketball coach, Eric Reveno, is lobbying the NCAA to have the same rules put into effect there. But the Timberwolves, what you have to understand is they have been so deeply entrenched in everything that is going on right now. I mean, one, you know, Minneapolis was ground zero for where George Floyd was killed. But also since then, I mean, this is a team. They've been bringing in team speakers to Zoom calls to talk about race issues. Their players have been protesting. Their players attended, including Karl Anthony Towns, right after his mother died, attended a rally in George Floyd's honor. I mean, this is a team that is as motivated and outspoken and innovative in terms of what they can do to attempt to further this march towards racial equality as any other NBA team. And so this was their thought, is that one very tangible way, because right now we're seeing lots of ideas and emotions flying around and much less tangible action in terms of what can physically be done. This is one tangible way in which they saw an opportunity to really make some change. And they thought, you know what? There are so many issues that go around voting in this country. There are so many issues from Georgia to Wisconsin, all over the country around access to voting. Why make it harder for our employees? And that's something that the front office and the business side both felt very strongly about.
Well, listen, you'd love to see more people jump on that bandwagon, giving everybody that opportunity, freeing up a day. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with that. We'll see what happens with the bubble headed
lots
to Orlando.
Seeing what happens.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Literally, honestly, Malika, every day in the current situation.
We'll see what happens.
I mean, nothing's etched in stone, we can say with great certainty. Thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time as always.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
We're delighted to be joined by Steelers running back James Conner. James, thanks for being with us. Before we get into anything else, it's been boatloads of crap around the world in all the ways you look at it. So I just wanted to take a moment to celebrate something that I saw from you last week, you giving your dad a brand new truck. And that was cool, and it made me smile. So I wanted to thank you for that, because there haven't been many things going on in the world recently that have made me want to smile, and that put a smile on my face. So thank you.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks for having me, and I'm happy I could put a smile on your face. Yeah, it was awesome. Now, you know, it's a blessing to be able to do that for my father. You know, he's been wanting a truck for a while. And like you said, it's an ugly world right now going on. You know, it's chaotic. And so I'm going to try to bring a little positivity, spread a little light, and show a little love. So I'm just trying to keep it going and keep spreading positivity.
You certainly did to him. He was one happy was man. So before we jump in again to some other things, you wrote a book coming out today, Fear is a Choice. Your story, well-documented, beating cancer the way you did and being the ACC Offensive Player of the Year in 2014, your years now with the Steelers. So what was behind the book? Why write the book?
Well, just my interactions with people in now today's world with social media. Everybody constantly tell me I'm inspiration and how they just were so motivated by me. And, you know, I just wanted to get on paper and have a piece where people can always, you know, look back on and just understand that, you know, we have adversity in life. There's, you know, we can't really escape that. But there always will be a way to, you know, be better because of it and come out on the other side. So we try to put together a timeless piece. I partnered with Harper Collins and it was, you know, the whole process, it was such a journey. It's awesome. And for it out today to be the day where it gets released, you know, it made it all worth it, you know, the whole process. So just want people to take from that, just apply it to their lives and just understand that, you know, it's get better.
Talking to James Conner with a Steelers running back here on Golic and Wingo. Again, his memoir, Fear is a Choice, is on sale today, so be sure to check that out. An unbelievable story. And James, part of that story is what you overcame in beating cancer while you were an athlete at Pitt. And we know now that everything going on in the world, a large portion of it, and even for you now in football, is centered on the coronavirus. And so I'm curious, for someone who dealt with an immune system disease, what have your conversations been like with your doctor surrounding a return to play with this virus as a backdrop?
Yeah, so when the virus first came about, you know, I talked with my doctor and I talked with my coaches and all of that. And, you know, my doctor assured me that, you know, my immune system is strong. And, you know, thankfully that was years ago. You know, I'm going on 4 years now, cancer-free. So I believe and I feel very strong and healthy right now. And so I'm going to take all, you know, precautions and play it safe and play by all the rules when we get back to the facilities and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm pretty confident that I'll be good and safe. I think my immune system is back up and strong and good again. So don't really have too many worries about that. But like I say, I'm still going to take precautions.
Well, everybody's going to have to take precautions as best they can and do the thing that,
yeah.
I mean, you can't social distance and be a football player. So what have you heard? Yeah. What have you heard from the organization in Pittsburgh or your coaching staff and Mike Tomlin about how they plan to proceed, or have you heard anything at this point?
No, it's kind of like everybody's still playing it by ear and kind of just waiting to see when we're going to report back and what that's going to look like as far as, you know, the guys, you know, lifting together. And like you say, it's kind of hard to social distance in football. You know, no matter how far we separate, you know, on the field, we're going to have to tackle each other, you know. So I'm not sure how it's going to look, but we're just trying to all stay conditioned, stay strong. And when we get back, we'll see how it looks. But, I'm itching to get back. I want to get back, but we got to stay safe first.
James Conner joining us, running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Again, all the teams, save for the two starting earlier, will report July 25th. The rest of the teams, July 28th. Obviously, a lot else going on in the world. You guys coming back, having to deal with the coronavirus, and then what's happening with the protests around the country and how it's kind of intertwined with the sporting world. And now the video that your players put out, the video Roger Goodell put out. I'm just wondering overall, between your thoughts and conversations maybe with other guys in the league, what you think of, A, the response of Roger Goodell, and really maybe the response or lack of response in some cases of the owners?
You know, I don't want to speak for anybody else. It's tough what's going on right now. I think everybody just has to honestly look and make sure that they're doing everything they can to make this to have change. And I know there are some owners who didn't speak out. It's just everybody just has to do their part, handle their business, and when they have that platform to speak up, I think they need to do that and realize and keep spreading this. But I think that's all it's about, is to continue to spread awareness. And I know there's been awareness for years and years, but you just got to keep it going and can't let it die down. You know, the protests and riots, all that kind of stuff is kind of still going on. It's still ugly out there. So change still needs to get happening. And I think the league, they need to continue to try to find solutions, continue to work on this plan, because it's not going away. And so it needs to be fixed. So I think we just have to keep marching forward and keep trying to put plans in place to make change.
And James, one of the ways that happens is by keeping this conversation at the forefront. And for a lot of people, that's what, you know, the protest accomplished back, you know, 4 years ago now at that point. And I'm curious, for the Steelers, going back to that time, there was so much conversation about coming out together and doing things as one and being on the same page when it came to the team response to everything that was going on. There's been a lot of talk in the news about players going forward and kneeling this fall. Have you or your teammates given any thought to that and how you might go about it in that instance?
You know, I think we'll handle that when we get there. I think it's far out to say that's what we're going to do. I don't want to, you know, it's like when in these situations, we're going to do everything that's going to try to spread positivity and raise awareness as always. So it's not like we came to a final decision and said everybody on the team is doing that. You know, I'm not going to do that and put the Steelers in headlines and say that. But we're trying to think of the best way to go about this to you know, raise awareness and make change. So, you know, still in discussion.
James Conner again joining us, running back for the Steelers. Again, his memoir coming out today, Fear is a Choice. So last one from us on that. When you were going through this and writing this book and reliving some of the things, how difficult was it at times? How emotional did it get for you to write this?
A little emotional, you know, just revisiting those dark times. But it's been some time now, not too long, but, you know, just going back and just trying to remember, you know, certain dates of things and how things played out. And that's why my co-author, Tiffany Brooks, did a great job. You know, she went back and interviewed old teachers and coaches and my family members and, you know, just to get some stories and some details that I might have even forgotten about. But, you know, it was tough going back and revisit those times, but I'm past those. It's all light and positive. And now we got the book dropping. So it was everything I went through was all worth it because, you know, now we're seeing better days.
Yep. It's a great story.
Certainly are. And we're looking forward to the book and we're looking forward to seeing you hopefully with the rest of the Steelers getting out there. James, we appreciate your time and keep on giving out trucks. Okay. That put a lot of smiles on a lot of people's faces.
Best of luck with everything, James.
Thank you. All right. Y'all take care.
Golic
makes me want to vomit and then punch you square in the face.
And Wingo.
Oh, he's saucy today.
To be joined on the Shell Penzoil Performance Line by the Cubs' Jason Kipnis right now. Jason, thanks for being up with us early this morning. We appreciate your time. I have to imagine that you and a lot of the players were sort of, when you heard Rob Manfred say less than a week later, well, we may not have it at all anymore. I'm not so sure. And it's really because of Tony Clark and those players. I don't think they want to play.
There's been a lot of hump moments in the last couple of weeks, if you ask me. It's getting out of hand of just what to follow right now and what means what. And I think it's getting almost to the point where I think players have had enough of the negotiations. And that's why you're seeing a bunch of us come out and unified and saying we're ready to play, just tell us when and where, and all of a sudden now that there might not be any games according to them.
So let's try and go through this on what either side is saying. I know the last thing, and believe me, I know part of this as going through a strike in 87 in the NFL and walking a picket line of what this can entail. As far as you guys saying, tell us where and when and we'll show up, and the league saying, as soon as we do that, you guys are going to file a grievance against them. And if you guys didn't file a grievance, we would just start a season. So just on that topic alone, would that be the plan, you guys, to file a grievance? And is there any thought that you would not file a grievance if, in fact, they just dictated the terms?
Well, I think we were ready to start the season because I think we were seeing that negotiations weren't going to happen. I think both sides were kind of stuck in the ground and not willing to move. So that's disappointing in the first fact that neither side, even players are guilty of it too, that neither of us are, with everything that's going around, able to negotiate. But I think when an MLB is threatening to play zero games unless we give up our grievances or our right to sue them, otherwise, I'm sorry, they promised that, like, so they won't play as many. I'm trying to put the words of how they're doing it, where they're threatening to play zero games if we don't sue, which means that they know we have a right case, meaning that they're not trying to play as many games as possible. So they know they could play more games right now, which is what we want, which is, of course, what means we'll have to pay a little bit more. So, I mean, it's just they're kind of showing their cards without ever really telling us it. I don't know. It's jumbles the words.
No, we kind of said that before. What you said, we know exactly what you meant.
Yes. The idea that they might actually be fearful that you guys have a point. And a lot of this goes back to the March agreement that everybody in this process keeps referencing. So when you guys, way back when in March, what was the first bit of messaging given to you guys as players when the league and the PA get together and they make this agreement before we know a lot about what was going on? What was communicated to you guys as far as the nature of that March agreement?
During the March agreement, I think we agreed upon a prorated salary by the game. I think we agreed upon in dealing this in good faith with everything that's going on. Obviously, we didn't have a crystal ball to see what would transpire here in the next couple weeks or months with the world. But I think we saw the opportunity that baseball had to try to captivate our fans back and maybe be the only sport to play at that time. And I think we wanted to be that one that stepped up and do the right thing and give fans some that nice distraction for everything. And I don't think anybody could have guessed that it would play out the way that it has.
Cubs' Jason Kipnis with us. So let's get to a couple of really targeted things here, because in that back and forth in the SportsCenter special last night, Rob Manfred said, hey, I thought we'd be good when we agreed on 100% prorated salaries. So it sounded like he was okay on that. Did you know that had been agreed to at that point? Was that your understanding?
From the March agreement, I believe so. I thought that's what, and I think that's why we thought the money side of everything was done. And I think that's been one of the main problems is now people are like, well, why don't you take a pay cut to the player side? We're like, we just want to be paid for the games that we played this year and nothing more. And now they're going back and trying to chip off even more of the block and take less and less. And it's like, at what point do we have to put our foot down? And because there is a big picture to this. It does go a little bit further than this season. It goes when you're looking into the union that the baseball has created for ourselves, and it's been created by worrying about the generation that comes after us and worrying about the players in the game. And I think with the CBA kind of looming in the background here in a year or two, there's just a lot more to it. So it's hard for us to give as much as we want to play. It's hard for us to really give too much of a leeway to them, because it'll lead to bigger problems for us down the road.
So he said it last night, 100% prorated salaries. He said that's there. So is it down to games? Is it the number of games that matters? And from the player's perspective, what's the minimum number of games you guys will accept to play on the field?
You know what? I don't even think we have a minimum. I think players really do just want to play. I know when you get into the fan aspect of it, you're starting to, what will crown a legitimate winner? What will do that? I think you're getting into the 60 game range, 65, 70. You need a couple months to really sort out kind of the winners. And that being said, I think when you have a season and all teams start from zero in the same spot, I still think there's a legitimate winner. You can put an asterisk if you want, but players don't have a minimum number right now, to answer your question. I think we really do just want to play. We love the game and we want to give fans that game back, but there just seems to be a hold on everything.
Jason Kipnis joining us from the Cubs. So along those lines, and I'm sure you guys feel, and we've heard you say, that because of the situation going on around the country, man, you'd love to find a way to play, but there is bargaining that means going into the future as well. There are those that are saying the people that are actually negotiating, if you want to call that, are so dug in, and maybe there's just too much animosity. Do you think at some point different people maybe getting together to kind of restart this thing would help, or your best guess at what can help move this along?
I don't think that's the worst idea, to kind of maybe change out the room and see if some different people can, some different heads can make light of the situation. But these guys have been doing it for a while. These guys, the answers are there. It's not like both sides don't know how to get this deal done. I think they're just unwilling to move right now. And, I think that's what's unfortunate, because it's as much as I want to make a joke on Manfred or anything like that in the Twitter world, he's more of a messenger merely for the owners and stuff like that. And I think players are trying desperately to get back on the field. We love the sport of baseball. We're tired of watching it kind of get drugged down to what it is right now. And we don't really want to stand by. So that's why we kind of just came up with the just tell us when and where and we'll get back to it.
If things keep going down this road and you guys face the real threat of no baseball, in this season. Do you guys think that the sport can survive this? Do you think that with what's looming in the distance, you guys are facing kind of a real crisis with the sport if this does go as south as it's pointed at right now?
I think it is a real crisis. I think the sport will survive, though. I don't underestimate how passionate some of our baseball fans are, and I don't think if you're mad at the sport of baseball, but someone on an afternoon game with 80-degree weather invites you to the ballpark, you're going to turn it down. That's still a great day. It's still a great tradition. It's still an amazing day to share with a father and son and stuff like that. There's so many beautiful things about the game of baseball that I got to believe it's got some staying power to make it through this stuff. But there's no denying that right now it's just a bad look, and players are guilty too of it. But there's not much feel, as much as we want to separate the business side from the real world, because we have to, where we can't connect everything that's going on in the real world to our business right now, because that's not fully how it needs to be worked out right now. But I got to imagine baseball will make it through this, but we're certainly digging ourselves a nice big fat hole right now.
No doubt about that. Jason Kipnis of the Cubs with us. So last Wednesday, Rob Manfred said, oh, 100%, we're going to play baseball. Now he's not so sure. In your gut right now, where are you on the idea that you will actually be on the field at some point this summer?
I'm on the high end. I think as frustrating as it was to hear him say that, I think there's smarter people than me that will tell you that's more of a negotiating tactic, that more than just a ploy to kind of delay what's really been going on, or what's the main picture here, where they're just trying to get the number of games down, so they'll just kind of delay it until there's not enough time to even play more than 60 games. I don't think both sides want to see the season go by. I think there's been enough negative stuff about our sport that the only way we can start getting back to the positive is getting on the field and seeing the great game again. So I got to believe that in the end, although it might not be from coming to an agreement, it might be just where Manfred kind of mandates it, that we get back on the field. So I'm up around 85%.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. And I think the best line we've heard in a while, Jason, is what he said was the answers are in the room.
Right.
They are right there in the room. It's just a matter
they
of
are, being there something. Are.
Yep.
So yeah, grind it out.
Yeah, there you go.
Listen, Jason, we appreciate you jumping on with us this morning, and we appreciate your time. Again, you really need to follow him on Twitter, at JK_the kid, Jason Kipnis. Jason, thanks for your time this morning, and I hope your 85% is right, because I'd love to be out there at Wrigley Field.
So do I. Big fan of you guys. Thank you.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.